Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hi friends, it's been a while since you've heard from me, and I wanted to come on and share just a little bit about my birth experience and my postpartum experience so far. You'll probably hear my sweet little baby making some squeaks and sounds in the background. He's currently dozing on my shoulder. I have no idea how long this is going to last, but I'm going to give it a try. So we are exactly 8 weeks postpartum today, and everything is going really well. Oh, and now my dog is in the room too. So it's just going to be kind of chaos in here. Totally unscripted, unedited, and hope you guys are down for that because that is what I can manage right now. So 8 weeks postpartum, it's been a whirlwind. All of the cliches are totally right that the days are so freaking long and the weeks are just flying by. So I can't believe I have an almost 2 month old, and everything's just been a lot of what I expected and also a lot harder than I expected. But not in a way that feels overwhelming. It's just hard, guys. It's hard, but it's wonderful. And I have zero regrets, and I'm really, really loving this whole experience. So I will just jump in and tell you all about it. So if you follow me on Instagram, you might have kind of caught wind of the fact that I was experiencing some pressure towards the end of my pregnancy to induce. And the reason for that is that I am advanced maternal age. I will be 40 in July. And so I was towards the end of my 39th year, and research, specifically the ARRIVE trial, really supports inducing women in the 39th week who are advanced maternal age. And I had read the ARRIVE trial. I understood kind of why that was suggested. And to me, the evidence was not enough to be convincing that it was necessary in my particular case. So I was open to induction if I went significantly past my due date. Not even significantly. If I just went past my due date, then I was willing to talk about it. But this was being brought up very early, in my opinion, like 35, 36 weeks. Every time I went in, we were talking about induction. So what I did agree to was more frequent monitoring towards the end of my pregnancy. I was going in every week. I was getting ultrasounds every week, I think starting around 36 weeks. And I was just hearing a lot of things like, you know, women your age have placental decline, or women your age have, you know, less blood flow to the area, things like that. And I did not want to hear about women my age. I wanted to hear about my placenta. And I kept saying, you know, if there's a problem with my placenta, I'm happy to go across the street right now and induce. But if it's just based on sometimes this happens, women your age, I really wanted more than that before I made a decision about how my own labor and birth were going to begin. So long story short, I ended up agreeing to an induction at 40 weeks, 3 days. So I went in on my due date, 40 weeks, that was a Friday, and I had a scan that day. Everything looked good. They did a membrane sweep, which was something that I requested because it is kind of a less invasive way of inducing. It doesn't work unless your body is ready, but sometimes it can be the thing that kind of tips your body towards going into labor naturally. So I had a membrane sweep. I went home with some cramping, but within a few hours it had subsided and nothing really happened. I did lose my mucus plug that night, but other than that, no contractions or anything like that. And so at that Friday appointment, I had agreed to check into the hospital on Monday for an induction. So that would have been 40 weeks and 3 days. I did not at all want to do that. It didn't feel right to me. Like, there was just something in my intuition that was telling me, wait, like, let your body do this, let your baby do this. you don't need to induce. And so I really had mixed feelings because my intuition was saying, don't do it. My head was kind of in a place of like, I feel like I'm going to have to induce no matter what. So if it's induce now and make the doctor happy, or I wait a week and everybody's nervous and then I still end up inducing, like, why would I wait a whole another week? I don't know why. I just didn't have faith that I was going to go into labor naturally. And then there was an element of fear of like, you know, these doctors, this is their job and they are advising this and it's for good reason. And I don't want to do anything that's going to put my baby at risk. But still, it just felt wrong. Like it just, for me, it didn't feel like the right thing to do. And this is nothing against induction. I think a lot of times it is the best thing. And I think a lot of women prefer it. They like the predictability of knowing the day and the time that they're going in and just to be able to kind of have a better idea of when the baby's coming. There are a lot of reasons why someone might choose to induce, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It just, for me, was not what I wanted, but I agreed to it anyway. So the induction was scheduled for Monday morning. I was 40 weeks, 3 days. That was April 12th. I spent that whole weekend prior to the induction really emotional. I cried a lot. I journaled. I wrote a letter to my baby that actually kind of turned into an apology for allowing the induction. And I just realized how uncomfortable I was with the whole thing. And yet it was what was happening. It just felt like the wheels were already in motion. So I was going to go forward with it. Fast forward to the morning of the induction. Monday morning, I was supposed to be at the hospital at 8 a.m. I live just 2 blocks away from the hospital. So I had set my alarm. I was going to get up and eat a big breakfast, even though they said don't eat, because I knew my labor could end up being very long and they were going to have me on clear liquids only. And it just doesn't make sense to me to try to labor when you're hungry. So I was going to go grab breakfast and coffee and go check into the hospital. And right before my alarm went off, I got a phone call from the hospital that said that they had had some women come in overnight in labor and they didn't actually have a room for me. So they didn't want me to come because there was nowhere to put me. And they couldn't really tell me if that meant they were going to call back in an hour, in a couple of hours, later that day, the next day. Like, I was just sort of left hanging, not knowing what was going to happen next. So I was relieved and it felt right. Like I just, there was something in me that just knew that induction wasn't supposed to happen. So I was relieved, but also I was just in this limbo because I didn't know now what, like I didn't know what was going to happen next. So I called my doula, or maybe we texted, I can't remember, but I did have a birth doula, which I'll talk about more in a little bit. She was so, so crucial during this time of really that whole weekend of like trying to sort of induce labor naturally and trying to process my emotions about being induced. She just was a total lifeline, and I absolutely recommend having a birth doula if you're planning to become a single mom by choice, or even if you're planning to do this with a partner. I still would totally recommend having a doula. And I, side note, planned to have her on this episode to tell the story with me, and just am not at a place where I can reliably coordinate timing of something where my baby's not going to need me. So I will have her on an episode at some point because she's amazing. Just right now it's not this one. But anyway, so she kind of helped me make a decision that if they called me back before, I can't remember if we said noon or one, but if they called me back like in the morning of that day, then I would be willing to still go in and go forward with the induction. And the reason for that was just like, I was mentally prepared for it. My bags were packed. My family was on alert. And I really just thought if I'm going to be either induced now or a few days from now, I should just go ahead and do it. So if they didn't call back until later in the afternoon or that evening, I wasn't going to go in. And the reason for that was just I needed a cutoff point just mentally and emotionally. And also I didn't want to start an induction in the afternoon. That would mean I was laboring in the middle of the night and I was giving birth, you know, in the middle of the night. Because who wants to do that? If you have a choice, one of the perks of induction is that you have a little bit more control over the timing. Obviously, you have no idea how long your labor is going to be, but you can try to help yourself by not starting at a time that means that you will likely be doing the hard stuff in the middle of the night. So the day went forward. I think I tried to go back to bed. I don't really remember what I did that morning, but I was just sort of stunned and didn't get a call. Noon, 1 o'clock came, didn't get a call. So I finally sort of switched mentally to, I'm not going to the hospital today. And as soon as I felt some relief about that and felt like that decision was made, of course, the hospital then called me and I told them, no, I'm not planning to come in today. I will reschedule. I will talk with my doctor and make a different plan. And because I had been going in for frequent monitoring every Monday, I'd been getting an ultrasound, and this was a Monday. I was 40 weeks and 3 days, and I decided that I did want an ultrasound because I did want to know that my baby was okay. Because as much as I didn't feel like I needed to induce, there is a chance that my placenta was not supporting my baby in the way that it needed to. I hadn't seen the baby on the ultrasound in a week, and even though I could feel him moving around and I knew, just kind of intuitively felt like everything was fine, I still just wanted that check, and I wanted to touch base with my doctor. So I went in that afternoon for an ultrasound. Everything looked great with the baby. Talked with the doctor. Again, she was still advising induction. We looked at the schedule and there was availability on Wednesday. So this was Monday. Wednesday would have been 40 weeks and 5 days. And the hospital had an opening at that point. And the doctor who was on call that day is actually a single mother by choice as well. And that felt really cool to me and just something that just felt a little bit more aligned. And I felt really comfortable with the idea of being induced on Wednesday. So I agreed to that. And before I left, the doctor did a cervical check. And she told me that I was a little bit more than 2 centimeters dilated, which was a little discouraging because I had had a check on my due date on Friday and I had been 2 centimeters at that point, which means I hadn't really progressed over the weekend. She told me I was a little bit more effaced than I had been on Friday, but really it just didn't feel like anything was moving. So she had done a membrane sweep on Friday. She did another one on Monday. And again, I left with some cramping. And I mean, I definitely felt like something had happened with that membrane sweep, but nothing really significant. Like I didn't leave thinking, ooh, that really kickstarted labor. So I went home. It was kind of late afternoon. I had planned to take a walk with my dog and I actually got completely dressed and shoes on and grabbed the leash and got to the front door. This was around probably 6 or so in the evening. And something just didn't feel right. I definitely wasn't feeling contractions or even really cramping. I just felt the urge to rest and to sort of conserve energy. And I wasn't at all thinking I was close to going in labor or anything like that. There was just something that sort of dissuaded me from going on this walk. And I was kind of being hard on myself because I knew that walking is one of the things that can help induce labor. And I was still really hoping to go into labor naturally prior to my induction on Wednesday. But I felt like I needed a rest. So I came back inside, changed into pajamas, which was weird because it was still really early and light outside, and just sort of laid down in fetal position on my bed. And I was texting. I had like several different kind of text conversations going and I was just scrolling on my phone. And it was one of those time warp moments where next thing I know, it's like 8 o'clock and I've been laying there for 2 hours, kind of just zoned out and doing not a whole lot. But I remember that I had been texting back and forth with several different people and I got to a point where it was like kind of hard to respond. Like I was having a hard time formulating a response in my head, typing it out. Like things just were getting harder and I was feeling weirder and weirder, but still not in any pain and definitely not anything that I thought was a contraction. And at some point in there, I had eaten some dinner. I ate some leftover Mexican food from the night before. And I started to have some pretty significant stomach cramps that felt pretty digestive. Like, honestly, I thought I had really bad gas like I'd never had before. Like, it was that feeling of I need to double over in fetal position. And like, if I could pass gas, the feeling would be released, but that didn't happen. So it got to a point where I was like, maybe I have food poisoning. Like maybe that Mexican food was bad, but it was weird because I'd eaten it the night before and nothing had happened. But I was feeling worse and worse. And at some point I texted my doula. This is around 8 or so. I texted her. I can't remember if I texted her or called her, but I let her know, hey, I'm feeling weird. I don't think it's labor, but it's something and I'll keep you posted. And then some time passed and I actually threw up a few times, which just further convinced me that it was something digestive or had to do with something I had eaten. But again, like I let the doula know, hey, now I'm throwing up. I'm feeling weird. I don't think it's labor, but I just want you to know. And then I just kept feeling I don't know how to describe it. Like what I was not feeling was waves of contractions that were anything that I could time on an app, or it just did not feel at all like I thought it was going to feel. But I was feeling very crampy and having harder time like concentrating on things, harder time standing up and moving around. I tried to get in a bath and that just did not work. Like I just couldn't do it. I felt some confusion about like what I should be doing. I don't know. It was just a very weird feeling. So I got kind of scared and I texted the doula again. She had been at an appointment and she was like, "Do you want me to come over?" And I was like, no, it's okay. I don't know. I think it's, maybe it's early labor. Like maybe this baby's coming later, you know, in the next couple days. And then I called her back and was like, "Yeah, I actually think I do want you to come." And I still was thinking I might have food poisoning, but I was feeling so strange that I thought it would feel nice to just have her here in my house. So I asked her if she could come spend the night. And I honestly thought she was just going to sleep in my guest room and we'd wake up and we'd have coffee together in the morning and just kind of laugh at how silly it was that I called her to come over. So she was far away. She was down in South Austin and I live in North Austin. She lives even further north than I do. And so she had asked if she had time to run home and shower and get her overnight bag. And I was like, "Oh yeah, totally. You definitely do." And so I heard from her around 10:30. She texted me that she was on her way over. I don't remember what I was doing. I think I had tried to get in a bath at 10:30 and ended up just sort of on my bathroom floor. Still somehow not fully convinced that I'm in labor. So my doula comes over. I remember struggling to get to the front door to unlock it when I knew she was on her way. And that was like a really hard task to get from my bathroom to the front door and back to my bathroom. So all of this should have been a sign, but somehow it wasn't. But I think at this point I was starting to kind of catch on like, hey, I think maybe this could have to do with the baby. Like, I'm 40 plus weeks pregnant and having major abdominal pain and pressure. Possibly this could be labor. So by the time she got to my house, I am on my hands and knees on my bathroom floor, breathing through what I now know were definitely contractions. And when she arrives, I'm like, "I think it's just gas. Like, I think maybe you could run to the store and get some Pepcid or something." And she's just calmly talking with me, listening, watching. And what she was doing was trying to time my contractions. And she realized that they were 2 minutes apart, maybe even closer, and that we got to go. Like, we got to get to the hospital. So very calmly, she kind of holds up a pair of flip-flops and she's like, "Are these the shoes that you want to wear? Because I think that we should maybe kind of like head in that direction." And I'm trying to tell her what clothes I want to wear and like to hand me clothes from my closet, and I'm trying to change clothes, and she's like, "Okay, so we're not going to change clothes. We're just going to put on these shoes and go." And luckily I had a bag packed, and so she was asking, you know, "Is there anything that's not in your bag that you absolutely need? Do you have your ID? Do you have your insurance? Do you have your phone charger?" So she kind of helped me like gather up those last minute items and got the bag into her car. And at this point, I'm convinced because a doula is telling me it's time to go to the hospital. And so I'm like, okay, I'm in labor. But I still think I'm in early labor. And so at this point, I start to get kind of scared because I'm thinking maybe I am moving from like 3 to 4 centimeters dilated. And it's so intense that the idea that I'm going to be doing what I'm doing for hours and hours was just totally unfathomable. So I never had a moment where I was like afraid that I was going to deliver my baby on my bathroom floor, because I just had no idea what was that I was so far along in my labor. But I was very scared that labor was going to be this intense for a very long time. And in hindsight, what was happening on my bathroom floor is that I was in transition. So I really didn't have that much longer to go, but I thought that I did. So I got out to the driveway kind of between contractions. My doula, her name's Sarah. Sarah got my bag into the back seat of the car and she kind of opened the passenger side for me, and I crawl in on my knees on the floor and kind of put my head on the passenger seat, and she's like, "Is that how you're going to ride?" And I was like, "Yep, this is what I can do right now." And so luckily the hospital is just a couple blocks away, and we pulled up to the hospital and there's a circle drive that's in front of the women's center part of the hospital. She pulled into the circle drive, put on her hazards, started like unloading me and my bag, and I thought she was gonna like drop me off and go park, but apparently I was so close to having the baby that she left her car there with her hazards on for like a couple hours till after the baby arrived. So we go inside. They have this little card table set up. They were doing COVID screening. And I didn't have a mask, like totally didn't even think about bringing a mask. I think they gave me a paper one when I walked in, but anyway, everything was just so scattered. Also, I was wearing still my pajama bottoms, like these purple plaid pajama pants, and I had changed shirts, but not pants. So I was wearing like a day shirt that was striped that totally didn't go with my pants. And I remember just kind of worrying about my outfit at a point, but then the contraction would hit and I just couldn't worry about anything but getting through that contraction. So they take my temperature and they're like trying to ask for my name and all of that, but like I couldn't even get my insurance card out or anything. So some labor and delivery nurses come rushing in. I'm sure someone called them because I'm like screaming, you know, having contractions in the lobby. And I get into a wheelchair. I can't sit down. So I'm in like on my knees with my hands holding onto the back of the wheelchair. And again, they're like, are you riding like this? And I was like, yep, this is what I can do. So they wheel me into an elevator upstairs to the labor and delivery room. We go into the labor and delivery room. I was so worried that I was still in early labor and it was this intense, but I got checked right when I got there. They called the doctor and we had to wait for just a little bit for the doctor to get into the room. And they're also trying to get an IV in. I think they tried like four different places. And honestly, guys, that was the most miserable and painful part of the entire, like I did natural birth with zero painkillers and the IV was the most painful part. So I don't know what was going on there, but they could not get the IV in. So they're trying and trying. And finally the doctor gets in and does a cervical check and I'm 9.5 centimeters dilated. So all this has happened from, I call my doula, like I think around like 8 was the first contact and then like 9:30. 10:30, she tells me she's on her way. She gets there somewhere in the 11 o'clock hour. We check into the hospital right around midnight. And this is probably like 12:30 or so that I'm 9.5 centimeters dilated. That afternoon at 3:30 at the doctor, I was only 2 centimeters dilated. So I had been in labor or, you know, dilating, like all of that was happening without me knowing it this whole afternoon. So by the time I was checked, I was very close to being able to push. So they basically told me we need a couple more contractions. There was like a cervical lip, they said. So just kind of move that out of the way and then I could start pushing. And because I got there so late, there was not even a discussion of epidural or anything like that. It's a good thing I did not want one because there definitely would not have been time for that. The only thing I had was the IV pushing fluids, which was totally welcomed because I had been throwing up that afternoon. I can't remember if I said that, but I had thrown up several times. So the fluids were great. That was a role that my doula played that was amazing, is that she had a cup of water with a straw, and all through labor, she, every time I was in between contractions, she was helping me hydrate. So I was drinking water, but there's no way it would have been enough because it was super intense. I was dehydrated. So the IV, even though it was really painful and uncomfortable, was totally worthwhile to have it in for the labor. And then I had a nurse who held the monitor on my baby, on my belly the whole time, because I just like couldn't stay still and they just never really got it on. So she held it in place the entire time, which was super sweet and amazing. And I also had to have a monitor clipped onto my finger to read my heart rate because they couldn't differentiate between mine and the baby's. And so in order to like make sure that both of us were okay, they had to have this thing on my finger. I was able to labor on my knees, kind of facing the headboard for a lot of the time. And then when it came time to push, they helped me turn around to face the foot of the bed and they put a squat bar in place. And so then they were able to kind of drop part of the bed down. I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but I was like in a squat position, which was really hard on my thigh muscles, but totally felt right in terms of like helping the baby to move down. So I was really happy to be able to labor in whatever position felt natural to me and to not be sort of persuaded to be on my back, because that just didn't feel like the right thing until the very end. I actually did give birth on my back, but it was after he was already like well past all of the bones and all of that. So anyway, so I get to the delivery room. They check me. I'm very close to being able to push. At some point, I had asked my doula to call my sister, and I had given her my phone so that she could do that. And she, my sister lives in Houston, and she was my support person. So that was a question that a lot of you guys asked me on Instagram, is what my support looked like. The plan was that my sister was going to come in town and not be in the delivery room with me, but that she was going to join me postpartum, either in the delivery room, but after the baby was born, or in the postpartum room, kind of depending on time of day and how I was feeling and all of that. So my doula called her. She lived about 2.5 hours away. She jumped in the car immediately. She knew, she had her bag packed, because if you remember, I was supposed to be induced that morning. So she was kind of on call that week to come anytime. So she started heading my direction. I started giving birth. My doula was there. She was amazing. She was super supportive. I think the biggest benefit of having a doula is that I was able to really go into a zone where I was not paying attention or aware of anything else that was going on in the room. I was just in this deep, almost trance-like state, really just focused on my body and the cues that I was getting from my body and really connecting with my baby. And every once in a while, I'd sort of like come out of that zone and ask the nurse who was holding the monitor in place if everything was okay with the baby's heart rate. But otherwise, I legitimately was not listening. Like, all these people were talking to me, asking me questions, and I was just totally ignoring them. And so having my doula there was amazing, because I knew that if she wasn't there, I would have to be kind of on guard to advocate for myself and to make sure that I wasn't going to like suddenly get an episiotomy, or, you know, that things weren't going to happen to me without my consent. So because my doula was there and she knew what kind of birth I wanted and what my preferences were, I just kind of let her manage the medical part of it in terms of communicating with the doctors. And I would only really listen to her. So if she told me to listen to my doctor, I would, but otherwise I was just totally in my own zone. That worked really, really well for me. There was a point where the doctor provided some really beneficial coaching on the pushing. So I was only using like the very first part of a contraction, and then just resting through when I was still having a contraction. I could have been pushing longer or more, and that was going to speed up my birth. And so I did kind of tune into what the doctor was saying and get some support from her. But for the most part, I was just really kind of in my own zone, and that worked for me. My baby was born pretty quickly. He was born at 2:06 a.m. and we had arrived at the hospital just right around midnight. So it was a very, very fast labor. It was not near as physically painful as I was anticipating. I don't know if I just got lucky. I don't know if it's because I did have a smaller baby. My baby was 7 pounds and 3 ounces at birth, and his head measured pretty small. So I think that maybe helped. But honestly, I was just expecting it to be like absolutely excruciating. And it was, but by the time it got to that part of it, it felt so purposeful, and he felt so close, and I was like so in the zone that it was just really okay. And that was really lucky, because I didn't have hours and hours of labor. So by the time it hurt really bad, I was close to meeting my baby. So that was helpful. So on Instagram, you guys asked a lot about what my support looked like while giving birth. And so you can hear just how important my doula was in my birth experience. Absolutely essential. I mean, she's the one who got me to the hospital. She was supporting me through the whole labor. And then she stayed for probably an hour, maybe a little longer after he was born. I actually have no idea, because I was in a total time warp, but she stayed for a while after he was born. And then she headed home. And my sister came, she was on her way just kind of as soon as we arrived at the hospital. And she got there about 45 minutes after my baby was born, which was totally fine, because it was never the plan for her to actually attend the birth. But she did come in while I was still in the labor and delivery room. And that was really perfect, because about 45 minutes or so had passed since my baby was born, and he had been on my chest that whole time. I had done delayed cord clamping, and I had done, they call it the golden hour, where you keep your baby with you and attempt that first breastfeeding before the baby goes anywhere to be cleaned up or footprints and weighing and all of those things. And so when my sister arrived, they were going to do all those things with the baby in the room, but still it was like, I don't know, 10, 15 feet away and kind of out of my line of vision. And I was still being stitched up. So I had a little bit of trouble delivering the placenta. Like it just wasn't unattaching from my uterine wall. And so that took some time. I did get some Pitocin to help with the delivery of that. And that was a little bit more painful and intense than I expected it to be, because everyone kind of says that's no big deal. But for me, my doula told me that the doctor actually was kind of tugging on the cord a little bit to try to get it to come out, because it just wasn't coming out. So that was way more intense than I was anticipating. And then I did tear just a little bit, and I don't know what degree it was. I think maybe second degree, but I'm not certain. But I did get a few stitches. So in this 45 minutes hour after birth, I was still being attended to. And so my sister got there, she met her nephew, and then she was able to kind of go across the room with him while he did all of his stuff. And then at that point, we both were kind of cleaned up and ready to move to the postpartum room. So my sister was with us as we moved down the hall to our postpartum room, where we stayed the rest of the hospital visit. So at that point, it was, I don't know, in the 3 o'clock hour, getting close to 4 a.m. My sister stayed with me, and of course I didn't sleep. I was on such an adrenaline high. My baby didn't sleep either. I don't think he slept for the first like 14 hours of his life, which was very scary, because it just felt like a newborn should be sleeping. But the nurses just kept saying, you know, anything is normal in this first 24 hours and just give him time. And sure enough, he did sleep like a normal newborn once the shock wore off. But I think both of us were just sort of like, what the hell just happened? Because it was a very, very fast labor. So my sister stayed with me. And when it got towards the morning, like, I don't know, 6, 7 a.m., my sister left to go to my house. I had left in such a hurry that I think I left the front door unlocked. I know I left lights on. I had just left my dog. Like, I hadn't let him out to go to the bathroom or fed him or anything. So I sort of needed her to go home and just check on things. So she did that. And I think she showered and slept for a few hours. Honestly, it was like such a daze that I don't remember exactly what happened. But I do remember being alone in my hospital room with my baby. And it was just such a sweet, sweet time. And also, I was utterly exhausted. So I remember holding him and being terrified that I was going to fall asleep. And they totally would have come in and put him in his little bassinet if I wanted that. They would have taken him to the nursery if I wanted that. But I just wanted him with me. And so I remember laying there and telling him in detail every single thing that was in his room at home, like every item on every shelf, every book that I could remember on the bookshelf, just because I was like at a loss for what to talk to him about, and I was needing to keep myself awake so I didn't drop him. So the other thing about being in the hospital was it was lovely. I mean, lots of people came in, lactation consultants and nurses and doctors, and people were checking on me and people were checking on him, and the support felt really great. But I was in a lot of pain because my tailbone was very bruised in the birth process. And I was just physically very, very uncomfortable in the hospital bed. So I was very ready to go home just because I was so uncomfortable. And I just felt like I'd feel better at my own house. I also had taken a shower at the hospital, but it was hard and it was an awkward shower. And I wanted to be home with my own bed, my own shower. I was just kind of ready to go. So my birth kind of happened overnight from Tuesday into Wednesday. And I stayed that whole Wednesday and Wednesday night, and then Thursday afternoon is when I checked out. So I spent kind of two nights, but really only one night in a postpartum room, because by the time I got in there, it was really kind of Wednesday. So that was what my birth looked like and what my postpartum looked like in the hospital. And my sister was kind of back and forth between my house and the hospital and able to bring me anything that I needed. And I just ate the hospital food, but you know, she was willing to bring me food from the outside if I wanted that. And we were just there for such a short period of time that there weren't a lot of needs. The main thing was just that I was physically in a lot of pain because of my tailbone and I wanted to go home. I also missed my dog, so I really wanted to go home and see my dog. So we went home on Thursday. My sister stayed with me, I think, for 3 or maybe 4 nights. And that was super helpful, not because my newborn was that high maintenance. Like, I actually think it would have been totally fine if I didn't have that support. if I hadn't been in so much pain. But my tailbone and other things too. I mean, it's giving birth is just hard on your body. But the main thing was I had a really hard time moving from sitting to standing, standing to sitting to laying. Like all of those transitions were just excruciating because of what had happened to my tailbone. And what happened, as far as I understand it, is that part of labor is that your bones in your pelvic area sort of move apart, and your tailbone, which is normally kind of pointing down or maybe even curled under slightly, sort of wiggles its way pointing more like to the back, and just like out of the line of fire. And mine did not have the opportunity to do that, which is why it ended up so incredibly bruised. And also, I think dislocated. I've still, 8 weeks later, when I hit a speed bump or like take a turn in the car, I can kind of feel it like pop a little bit. So things are still not quite okay with my tailbone, but much, much, much better than they were at the time. Anyway, so my sister came home with me. She was amazing. She would help me like refill my water bottle because I was super thirsty with breastfeeding. She was constantly like making sure I had enough water. She was arranging the pillows to help me breastfeed, like to get into the right posture for breastfeeding. She was holding him so that I could sleep. Like she was really amazing. And she was here, I think 3 or 4 nights. And then when she left, my mom came, and my mom was here that whole next week, I want to say, staying with me. And also my dad and his husband had come, I want to say I came home from the hospital on a Thursday. I think they came in town on the Friday, so the very next day after I got home, and they rented a place. So they didn't stay with me, but they stayed very close to me, and they were kind of back and forth and helping quite a bit and just around. So I had family around. And then when my mom and my dad's left, my sister came back. So a lot of you guys wanted to know what support looked like. And I really, really had a lot of support. And that was really helpful. Again, not because my newborn was that difficult, but because my own body was just really in a lot of pain. So I would definitely say it's important to have support, whether it's support that you hire or family members or friends or just setting up some sort of rotation of people checking in on you. I think I would have been okay with a little bit less support than what I had, but gosh, I'm so thankful for what I had. So that was amazing. And then moving forward into, you know, it's been 8 weeks now. I've been at home, so I'm not back at work yet. I'll go back in early July. And I haven't gone too many places, but at this point I feel really comfortable driving with my baby in the car. At first that wasn't super comfortable. So I think someone had asked that question, like, how did you get around? I think by maybe the 3rd or 4th day home from the hospital, I was feeling okay about driving, but I had a doctor's appointment right when I got out of the hospital for my son to get checked out by the pediatrician, and my sister drove me and I sat in the back with Miles just because, you know, I wanted to make sure he was okay in his car seat. And then I had another appointment with a lactation consultant, and I practiced riding in the front seat. My dad drove me and Miles was in the back by himself for the first time. And then after that, I felt okay about driving. The main thing is just I had to sit on a pillow because of my tailbone thing. So that took forever to finally feel normal again. But, you know, with COVID and then with having an infant, I just stayed pretty close to home for the first few weeks, and people came to me and brought me food, or we ordered in, or I had some things in my freezer prior to giving birth. So those first few weeks are kind of a blur, mainly breastfeeding and staring at my baby and kind of in awe that I had actually done it. And then May 8th, that weekend, it was Mother's Day weekend, I went to my dad's house, which is about 45 minutes away. I went to spend some time with family for a week. And that was really nice because I wasn't in my own space. I had help with like all of the meals. I wasn't worrying about cleaning. I wasn't trying to keep house. Like I was just taking care of my baby. And my mom came and visited there. My grandma came and visited. My sister, other sister who hadn't met the baby yet, like she came with her kids. she had just had a baby too, so I got to meet my nephew for the first time. So that was really, really nice to just be out of my space. I did have to lug so much stuff, and a lot of it I didn't actually need, and then some of it I needed and didn't think to bring, but babies just have a lot of stuff. So it was a little bit hard relocating with that young of an infant, but totally worth it just to kind of have a change of scenery and more help. So I've actually done that twice now in the last 8 weeks. I've gone to my dad's house and spent a chunk of time there. I also drove to Houston, which is about 2.5 hours, 3 hours from Austin, with my newborn in the car. That was interesting. And I did have to stop for a pretty long chunk of time each way and like breastfeed and walk around in a parking lot and kind of just give my baby a break from the car. But we made it and it was totally worth it because I got to just, again, be sort of with other adults and out of my home where it just, I mean, the days are just so long, the breastfeeding and the diaper changing and the trying to come up with what to do to entertain an infant over and over and over again. And like, there's not a lot of difference between the days and the nights. And I just needed a break. So it's been good to travel a little bit. It's been good to schedule friends coming over. And that's something that I've really advocated for myself. Like, I've reached out to friends who've said, hey, let me know, you know, I want to help. I will reach out to them and say, hey, here's what you can do to help. And it's not the things that I thought I was going to need. It's not fold a load of laundry or vacuum or those types of things. It mostly is, I need company. Like, I just need to have something to look forward to. I need a reason to like shower and just to have an agenda, because otherwise it's just so much of the same over and over and over again. So it's super helpful for someone to hold the baby for just a little bit while I do fold a load of laundry or take a shower or, you know, whatever the thing is. But I've been really lucky with a baby that sleeps really well at night. So I'm actually getting plenty of sleep. There have been some times where I've definitely felt like I could use more sleep. But for the most part, the nights are going okay. And it's not that I need to nap. It's more that my days are so long because there aren't a lot of times where I put him down. And so I'm doing things, but I'm doing them slowly and one-handed. And it's just so nice to have a break where he's happy, someone else is holding him. But as he's getting older and getting more interested in things, I can put him on a little play mat and he's interested in the little toys that dangle down and he's a little bit happier in his little chair. And I do see a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I think that we're kind of reaching a point where I'm going to have a little bit more freedom at home. But so far, that's been what I've needed, is just sort of like another adult around and mostly another adult to hold the baby while I do other things. So I think most of the questions you guys had for me were kind of around what my support looked like in the hospital and then what it looked like at home and sort of how I'm managing being on my own with a newborn. And someone had asked about like must-have items. I don't think that there are any for me that are like, oh, you have to go buy this thing. I think it's kind of inevitable that you're going to buy at least one high-ticket item that you're going to end up totally not using. For me, it's my bassinet. I really had this picture that my baby was just going to happily sleep next to me in a bassinet in my room. And that is not what's happening. We've had all kinds of different arrangements that have not been that. Now at 8 weeks, I do have him sleeping in his crib in his room with a monitor, and his room's very close to mine. And I feel comfortable with that. So that's what's working for us now. But we tried a lot of different things and the bassinet just didn't work for us. He was just not having it. And then there probably is something you're not going to buy that you're going to need to buy. I think something that's been surprising for me is how willing I am as a pretty frugal person to just shell out money for anything that makes life more convenient. So like, for example, my house is very small. I have about 1,000 square feet and I had a Boppy nursing pillow that I was using mostly in the living room, because when I had people around, I was feeding in the living room quite a bit. And so it would kind of just hang out and live on the couch in the living room. And then I started feeding him more and more in his nursery, in the glider in there. And so it just felt like the Boppy pillow was never in the room that I wanted it to be. It was always in the other room. So I just bought another one. And they're not expensive. They're $30. But the fact that I would rather spend another $30 and get a second pillow than like walk you know, 10 to 20 feet to get the one that I already had. That's the kind of decision that surprises me that I keep seeing myself make, is that I'm just willing to purchase out of convenience and have a lot of extras of things. I can't even tell you how many pacifiers I have, and my baby isn't even really all that attached to the pacifier, but again, it's just one of those things that, like, when you need it, you want it to be right there, and I just kind of wanted one in every room, one in every pocket. So that surprises me, but you don't really know what those things are until you're in it. So I would say, if I had to give some advice there, I would just say, like, stash a little bit of money that you're just going to plan to spend on convenience items once your baby is there. Also, like, clothes for me is not something I was thinking about at all, but I realized when I came home that, like, none of my clothes were breastfeeding friendly. So I've done several purchases, not anything fancy, but just like Target, you know, shirts and Amazon dresses and things that work for breastfeeding. Because if you can't get your boobs out easily, it's just, it doesn't work, because you're feeding every 2 hours, you know, all the time. So in terms of support, I think another piece of advice that I have is kind of construct a list, even on paper, but certainly in your mind, of people that you know are willing to help you. And then just be okay with asking for exactly what you need. Because a lot of people are going to say, I'll come over and hold that baby whenever you want, or they'll offer help, but it's not necessarily the type of help that you need. So, like, for example, I have a family member who has been so gracious with taking over my lawn care. Like, he's just super happy to mow my lawn every time it needs it. But what I realized is that what would be really nice for me is if I got to mow my lawn as a way of moving my body and, like, taking a break from my baby. And so what I really wanted was not for someone to just take care of it, but to get outside and sweat and work and move my body in a way that's different than, like, holding my baby and breastfeeding. And so I asked for that. Hey, instead of mowing my lawn, can you just hold my baby so I can mow my lawn? And that felt really nice to do. So yeah, so I think just knowing who your people are and then being okay with just asking really specifically for what you need is a super helpful thing to be comfortable with as you move into solo motherhood. But yeah, I mean, the days are long, but I think just knowing that it's not forever. And I know a lot of you guys express so much concern about, like, what those first few weeks look like. And I'm not saying they're easy at all. But I also think if you're trying to base this decision about whether or not you can handle this, or this is something that you can manage based on the first few weeks, like, it flies by and it's already easier. So another item that I love is I have one of those little play gym things. It's like a mat with a little arch over it that hangs toys down. And a week ago, my baby had zero interest in that. And right now I can lay him on that mat, and for like 15 minutes, maybe longer, he's just so happy to look at those toys and, like, watch movement when they wiggle and kick his feet. And for 15 minutes, I can fold laundry and brush my teeth and make a sandwich and, you know, do the things that I need to do. And that's only going to increase. And so I'm not saying it's easy, but I do think that it's all a season. And if you're worried about this postpartum period, you can get the help that you need. But even if you don't have the same level of support that I had, you'll make it. And then it will be on to a new and different kind of challenge. So you just don't need to be so concerned about how you're going to make it through this stage. Because I think it's hard for everybody. It's hard for people who have partners. It's hard for people who, you know, I think about, like, people who have multiples. How the hell do you do that? But they do it. People do it, and they live, and, you know, they raise great kids, and everybody survives. So I think I'm going to wrap up for now, because my baby's starting to kind of let me know that this is as much as he can take. But I hope this is helpful, and I hope to bring you guys some more podcasts here pretty soon, as soon as we get back into the swing of work. And pretty soon my baby's going to have some time away from me, which is both sad and hard to imagine, and also really liberating. I'm really looking forward to reclaiming parts of who I am. Maybe moving back into some coaching. I'm not sure yet what that's going to look like. I've got a wait list of quite a few of you who are interested. And so I will let you know, if you've reached out to me, how many clients I can take and what that's going to look like, just as soon as I have a plan. But right now I'm just really trying to enjoy my time with my sweet little Miles and just enjoy every moment. And I hope that you are following on Instagram so you can see some cute pictures of him. He's just absolutely the sweetest. And you guys, this really is the best choice I've ever made zero regrets and none of the sadness that I thought I would feel about doing this differently than I imagined, you know, for most of my life. It's just, it's incredible. So I hope that if it's the right thing for you, that you also make this choice, because it's just the best thing ever. And I will talk to you guys soon. Love you all. Bye. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com, or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.